Hi everyone, welcome back to season 1, episode 4 of Charmed Life.
Charmed Life.
We are flipping the script for you guys this week. We're doing something completely different.
Let's switch real.
This isn't a Charlie story, this is a Brian Noon special.
Oh no.
Brian, what you got for us today, buddy?
Well, journey with me. This is going to be a strange one, but it is going to be about Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys creating one of the, in my opinion, best albums of all time called Pet Sounds.
Oh, so you're taking us to Kokomo?
No, probably not. Maybe Aruba or Jamaica.
If I'm lucky.
Yeah. <that's>
All right, here we go. Let's get it.
Let's try it. So, is Pet Sounds the best album ever?
Oh, you're asking me? I mean, no.
I guess I'm asking the masses. And, you know, obviously, if you're a Beach Boys fan, you know this album well. Especially during the time that it came out, it was pretty groundbreaking. It was very strange. It was pushing what was considered at that time like kind of creative limitations that were occurring, especially at the time because it was at the same time that the Beatles and the Beatle craze was still occurring. But I think it was also around the same time that they were starting to experiment with psychedelics and start making their music kind of change a little bit into more of that Sgt. Pepper sound, moving away from the what would you call it, like boy band, boyish charm of sound that was occurring at a younger age, right? And Beach Boys definitely have that as brothers. And so with Pet Sounds, as I kind of mentioned, I'm going to try my best to kind of keep it as light as possible and just give you some things to think about along the way with really the creative genius behind the album, Brian Wilson, and his struggle with mental health and mental illness throughout the entire process of making this album, but also throughout his entire life that he faced. So with Pet Sounds, it's considered to be among the most influential albums in music history. The album was produced, arranged, and almost entirely composed, as I said, by Brian Wilson. It's been acknowledged as what's considered a masterpiece, a record that topped countless polls of the greatest albums ever made, which I feel like we say a lot on this podcast.
We do, but maybe we're just picking the right content.
Right, but it's all, I think it's relative to the time, right? Or relative to the time of when those albums are coming out. It's been revered by musicians and fans alike as the pinnacle of Brian Wilson's like songwriting, production, and all around just creative genius.
Interesting. That's high praise for someone that already made gold before that album.
Prior, yeah. Correct. Yeah, I mean, the albums they had out prior were doing so well that, they were touring heavily. They had a very friendly rivalry with the Beatles. I think they were on the same label at one point in time as well. And so it seemed like at that point, especially those two bands were kind of pushing album to album, just like new sounds and new development to just kind of keep pushing that creative musical capability to a different level.
Yeah, I would almost liken it to the Britpop struggle that we had in the UK when I was coming up. It was the Blur versus Oasis.
Sure, they're perfect examples.
And that was literally what I always understood as rival bands who
absolutely
are kind of both pushing history forward at the same time.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people would agree with you on that. And I have a couple buddies, shout out to Jerome and Phil specifically, who are big fans of both bands, Jerome, especially with Oasis, and is always talking about the debate between the two bands, Oasis and Blur, at that time. He's a huge Oasis fan. But I won't go into more detail about that, other than he also isn't a huge Beatles fan, which I think is also rumored to be similar to someone else in the room.
Who on earth would you be referring to, Brian? Listen, I mean, it's one of those things where it's kind of like when people admit that they don't like dogs. You just become an instant social pariah.
Like, you don't like dogs? Yeah. What's wrong with your soul?
And that's honestly when people are like, oh, do you like the Beatles? And I'm like, honestly, I couldn't give a fuck. Yeah, right. And people are like, what?
Yeah.
But they birthed all modern music as you know it, Charlie. And yeah, you know what? They can just get in their yellow submarine.
And just float away.
Yeah. No, listen, I think I've grown to understand their influence. I think I hated on them more when I was a kid just because of the simplicity of their early stuff.
Sure.
Which is something I never felt about the Beach Boys.
Right.
I felt like musically, the Beach Boys were so far superior.
Oh,
and,
interesting.
Yeah, and I was always, this was before my time, but even looking back, I play Beach Boys any day of the week over the Beatles, even though I'm English.
Yeah, so brilliant. So I think that was really well spoken. Thanks for letting me call you out on that. The Beatles, for sure, resonate for a lot of people, and you can see the mark that they made and the importance, but at the same time, you totally nailed it with like more of the simplicity of what they were doing versus like what the Beach Boys were doing.
They were the first ones to do simple well and turn it into international just mania, the Beatlemania. Yeah. I respect that.
Yeah, and nothing's ever come close except for maybe you could say like a Justin Bieber.
I don't think the Beatles ever ripped off any of their album
covers. I don't know. No, it's probably not. I'm sure a lot of people have ripped off theirs though.
Yeah.
But yeah, so anyways, that debate aside, I think it actually ties really well into just the point that with Brian Wilson, especially with this album Pet Sounds, there really was no such thing as simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as simplicity, even in this man's brain.
Tell me more about Pet. When was Pet Sounds released?
Yeah, so Pet Sounds came out in July 1965. It was recorded between July 12th, 1965, and released April 13th in 1966.
Okay.
So put a full year about into the album, right? And as you said, the albums prior that they made were gold and major hits. They're touring on them. The brothers were doing a phenomenal job selling out all of their shows, having no troubles there. Definitely no rivalry between them and the Beatles, as I said. But I think fandom-wise, there definitely was a separation.
There was a divide for sure, yeah.
So you were either definitely a big Beach Boys fan or you were a big Beatles fan. I'm sure you could do both, but there definitely was a separation. But yeah, so it's funny too, actually. So when the album was recorded, it seems every recording studio on Sunset Boulevard claims that like Pet Sounds was recorded there.
Every single one. Is it like when you go to the UK and it's like the best fish and chips in England?
Yeah, exactly. Every pub's got
okay, well, congrats.
I mean, shit, I'll go to England and pub crawl all the best fish and chips.
There you go.
I'll attest to whichever one is. I fucking love fish and chips. Chips being French fries, not actually like a bag of potatoes.
Like a bag of Lay's or something. Which is called Walkers in England. But we digress.
I know you call them crisps.
We do, but the brand is Walkers.
Oh, got it. Yes, okay. I love it. Brilliant. So yeah, it's just really funny because all of these studios claim it. So I've seen claims by like Columbia Sound, East West Studios, United Recorders, Sunset Sound, and a bunch of others.
Who can substantiate it, though?
But here's the thing. They're actually all correct.
What?
Yeah, that's the crazy thing. So Brian used different studios to get different sounds, cutting back tracks all on 4-track.
Wow.
Isn't that insane?
That is absolutely mental.
It's mental.
Yeah, that is.
And to think about someone doing something like that at that time, too, was already just so ahead of what anyone was doing. Correct me if I'm wrong, please, listeners. You know, comment and let us know. But this, to me, the story-wise, is just, it's phenomenal.
You got to remember as well, that was the 60s.
Right, and in the 60s, there's so, yeah, it's, the music back then was just such a different cutting force.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds were just, you know, there were so many different, like, people were testing new equipment. There were new guitars. There were new effects being used, and all the different ways you could record something, or or reverse something. And yeah, there, I mean, it was strange because it seemed like an endless possibility, but really there was still like what seemingly was like a cap of to what the technology allowed.
Well, you were kind of shackled at the time by the instruments that those people had.
Right.
And I'm sure that you are going to tell me more about the kind of instruments that Boy Brian used.
Yeah. So, well, before I go there though, why is the album called Pet Sounds? Is one of the things that a lot of people were trying to figure out.
I have no idea.
And here's the thing. So even one of the brothers of the band didn't quite know. And really it came from Brian's mind, who later details, which I'll get into. But initially the confusion was the band thought that it meant petting or like an album to make out to. Is like what they were kind of like selling it.
Yeah, like heavy petting.
Yeah, heavy petting, exactly. And instead, the name actually mostly came from what they joked about Brian Wilson and him being able to hear noises that others couldn't, like dogs, goats, and other animals that you might find specifically at like a zoo. And so in play of these jokes, brotherly love, brotherly poking, we later find out in detail that he is later diagnosed with having schizophrenia.
Wow, okay.
And so that is why the topic is unavoidably heavy.
Yep.
And something that I think is important to try to remove some stigma with. And in doing so, I will be vulnerable and state that I myself deal and struggle with mental illness. I've struggled with depression most of my life. I have been around family members that have struggled with depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia. So it's not, this sort of thing isn't scary to me. And I know that it can be a topic to most people and some people, but I definitely want to offer as a platform to anyone that wants to talk more about it, to reach out to me specifically or to us on our site, because I'm always willing to have that conversation, especially to remind those that you are not alone.
Good man.
Just like Wilson.
Good man.
Who might have felt very alone at that time, but ended up producing an incredible album. So let's get into that.
Let's get into it right now, yes. Man. I'm ready.
All right. So it's actually been over 50 years since the Beach Boys released their milestone album, Pet Sounds.
Christ.
Over 50 years. Isn't that crazy? It's so long ago. And you play that album and it's still like, God, all of their albums hold up. But that one, you just listen to the texturing and all of the different sounds that are in there. And it is so overwhelming. Good luck. I mean, I think we might have an episode later where you talk about some breakdowns of sound and listening to instrumentation and as being a producer and all the different things that producers can kind of throw into the mix and blend together in different sounds and instruments.
Oh yeah.
And sometimes it just can be so chaotic. It's so hard to catch. You have to go back and re-listen to a song just to hear one part 100 times before you even hear that one thing that you might have missed.
Yep.
Right? So this album, I think, has a lot of that. As mentioned, over 50 years, which is crazy ago, is when they released Pet Sounds, okay? But the record's genius was like hardly represented by what is the strange sleeve art that they have as the cover of the album, which features only a snapshot of the band, which is Mike Love, Al Jardine, and the Wilson brothers, Brian, Carl, and Dennis, all standing in the San Diego Zoo feeding goats.
Oh my God, dude, I just pulled it up.
Did you look at it? This... Okay, good, because I want to show it to you. So describe what you're seeing. It's the funniest thing. And that's the album cover they put out.
I kind of love it.
Oh, I love it too. But just think about, like, especially at that time. So it's 1966. The bands that were out at that time, like the album covers were way more, I think probably like more like strange, psychedelic. Some might have, especially in this sort of genre, sound and music that was coming out, I think like probably more psychedelic, more cartoony, but definitely not something as like just strangely almost simple.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best way I can describe it is there was a lot of stylized art at that time, yeah, right? Perfect. There was a lot of kind of like broad strokes, mm-hmm. concept pieces. And this kind of looks like what you'd find at the local zoo, being yeah. like, come and do our like 2-for-1 right. Saturdays. It's right. basically just these this band
right.
feeding goats
right.
every single band member, all of the boys, they each have a goat with them. And yeah, it just kind of looks like a, it almost looks like one of those commercials where it's like, with the time you have left, use Ozempic, right? And then someone's claimed his life nice. Back by feeding a goat.
By feeding a goat.
It's just yeah, such brilliant. A weird thing.
It's bizarre. And it, each member's expression is like, it's so funny. Like Wilson's on the far left, I think. And you can see like his excitement.
Yes.
And then as you go down the line, you can also see like almost to the very end on the right is who's the this? Juxtaposition.
Yeah. Who's that lad on the
it's
right?
One of the other absolutely brothers. Disgusted. I'm not sure which one it is. And he's like terrified yeah. almost, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's actually go back to that day the photo was taken.
Okay.
So it's Thursday, February 10th, 1966.
Ooh.
The goat's awake before dawn. The air is cool and still over San Diego, and the sky is cloudy. No, I have no idea. And in Los Angeles, 150 miles north, the Beach Boys arise and prepare for a journey. For on this day, the greatest band in America will meet seven goats in a petting zoo.
Is that an official bio? Or?
Can't be now. It's everything, it's nothing. It's a moment in history that is literally captured and put on an album cover.
So what's the historical bearing here?
Yeah, so it's, you know, so that's a good question. So Brian was actually asked, why did you guys go to the zoo that day? So it's, I'm really glad you asked that. And he said, I don't remember who thought of going to the zoo, but we just decided to do it. When we got there, we got some apples. We cut them into little pieces and we fed them to the goats. They took a few pictures and we decided to put that as our cover art for Pet Sounds. We all looked so good, you know? We were so young, happy, smiling, and great, you know?
And that's a direct quote.
End quote.
Oh my God. It sounds like how any of us end up going to the zoo.
Right, exactly.
Which is like, do you want to go to the zoo? Just, yeah. What else are we going to do?
Yeah, why not? Yeah. So it's like, that's the backstory of it. And that was it, right?
Right.
But, you know, as you dig deeper into Pet Sounds and all of the aspect of like, why the goats? Why on the top of this cover? I think everything kind of, it's really hard to kind of draw the line to everything historically. So that's why it's hard to tell this story. No one's really been able to get, I think, it right, because especially with Wilson being someone that dealt with mental illness, I think it's probably also, and so many other brother members, you have so many different memories. So it's hard to depict.
Yeah, there's not a cohesive story, is there?
No.
Yeah.
So, but what's interesting and what is universally like collective in it is, you know, the rest of his brothers and bandmates were joking that he himself was admitting to hearing sounds all the time.
And when you say sounds?
It was voices.
Okay.
He heard voices. He talks about having audio sounding hallucinations in his head, like almost as if you stand too close to a speaker and you walk away, you might get that whomping sound
mm-hmm.
or some sort of a reverberation, some sort of audio hallucination. But he also heard voices and he also heard sounds of animals that he speaks specifically mostly around dogs and goats.
Okay.
So the tie-in for them and this album cover is very like altruistic and strange that it happened the way that it did with this. Because he was already having these hallucinations, already having these sounds prior to them going to this petting zoo.
Well, I think what this also highlights as well is it brings in my mind a whole new dimension to this, because it's actually we've completely swung from a funny story about the brothers going to pet some goats. But
right.
now yeah. we've got this element of the goats have been speaking to Brian the whole time.
Right.
No, but he's been that auditory kind of sound
he's
to
heard,
him.
Yeah.
He's been hearing the goats
Correct.
When the goats haven't even been there.
Correct.
So the fact that this is now featured as the album cover
Correct.
Is making so much more sense than
yes.
it did 5 minutes ago.
5 minutes ago, right.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is, you know, this is after Wilson has done a majority, if not the entirety of the album, has like been just about composed and arranged at this point, to them, you know, using this photograph. From my research and understanding as far as trying to pinpoint the historical accuracy mm-hmm. to it. So you're right. The way that it falls into place now makes a lot more sense. But it's interesting because that year prior, couldn't have been more than I think a year, the rest of the band decided to leave to go on tour, which Brian was committed to being part of, but was clinically having too much of an issue with his depression and his illness and wanted to stay home because he had to get the sounds out of his head.
Wow.
And the music out of his head that he was hearing and record this album.
And that's where Pet Sounds came
from. Wow. And so the rest of the band, I think at the time, they went to Japan and Tokyo and so toured like far over to the other side of the world, not just in the U.S. It wasn't a U.S. tour. It was definitely overseas. So Brian Wilson decides to hang back so that he can get this album out of his head or write, which is what he wanted to do. He wanted to write. He had to. He had to get these sounds out of his head. And so while working with these studio musicians that he had, he was creating this beautiful album from start to finish, song to song, and it all hitting him in these like weird, based on how he's described it, very lightning in a bottle moments, and being confused by sounds and being confused by arrangements, and even the musicians that were recording in the studio being confused by the arrangements he was writing and them asking questions. Why would we do this in this segment? This doesn't theoretically, music-wise, make any sense. And he says, well, it doesn't yet, but it will once we put this sound together. So like this brilliance he had was his ability to literally hear from start to finish every arrangement.
A grand design.
Grand design, yeah. Right. Which is like what a brilliant composer does, right? Mm. And with his brilliance and genius came this schizophrenia and the sound and hearing. So there's that play, trying to figure out, you know, how much of this is at fault to being mentally ill versus
how
being
much
at
is fault genius? To it,
right. And often maybe it's both.
Those two things, as we've seen already in Charm, like, and like we were going to continue to see this season.
Yes.
Those things go hand in hand.
They do.
People love a bit of, I guess, otherworldly in yeah. music, and some yeah. of the best musicians are the most tortured.
They are. It's their form of expression. It's their way of releasing what they need to. I mean, most great artists talk about it, musicians especially, and this is the way for them to get it out. So you're right. There's a blurred line between the mental health part versus the genius part. And I do think that in part they go hand in hand. But it doesn't take you to have to be a mentally sick person or a crazy person to write a great album. You can still do that. Regardless, Brian's creating what already the studio musicians are confused and complexed by. And then he goes, based on rumor, brings in live animals
into all the different studios.
And who knows which studios are which in LA, because they all want credit for, you know, him being in there. And he does admit that he went to a lot of them, if not all of them, to record.
So what livestock did he have in there?
Apparently.
A whole array of fauna.
So apparently he had dogs and cats and mules and goats. And those, like, think about that in a close quarter in musical studio.
I have questions.
Yeah,
first and foremost question here is, who is cleaning up after the recording's done?
Yeah, someone's got it.
Yeah.
There's no way that there was just music and cables left behind.
They're like, hey, Timmy, 4 lattes, someone's, and while you're at it, shovel this crap.
Yeah, I mean, it's absurd. And that was like part of what's also really special about it too is it's funny because there's no real detail in like knowing the legend of how truthful and to what extremity this all really went down. But what is nice and that ties together is these recording musicians that worked with Brian trusted him and loved him.
Yeah.
And so even through their confusion with him bringing in this livestock and animals into the place, they still, even then, didn't necessarily undermine him. I'm sure they poked fun. Who knows? We weren't there. I don't know. That's the part that will never be written.
But listen, if the goat wants to bring a goat in, that's his prerogative, right?
Right.
The other thing too is you say that it's rumored he had animals there, but
yeah.
I don't have the exact timing of when it happens, but there are lots of animal samples in that album for correct. Real. They had correct. To have been obtained somehow.
Correct.
So why not so bolster why, the legend?
Right,
you know?
Right. And the thing that's interesting about it too is like he has, I think it's in the Rolling Stones or one of the interviews in a bigger magazine is asked about like the pet sounds and noises that he hears. And he does have like the brass instruments mock the sound of what would might sound like a goat or a donkey or a mule or something. Wow. So like using an instrument to make the sound of an animal, because for him it's what he heard and what fit and what felt right to be mixed into the music.
And again, it all goes back to what you're saying about his mental health.
Right.
How much is his schizophrenia, how much is his genius?
Right.
In the same way, it's like, not only am I layering the good and the bad of my brain in a sense, but I'm also layering, is it an animal? Is it a trumpet? Is it a mineral? Is it a vegetable?
Right.
Brian's just keeping them guessing.
Yeah, it's true.
And it's amazing because there's very few stories that exist like this still with all of the kind of production that happens now.
No, absolutely.
You know, someone could use a sound of a goat, but you guarantee it was pulled off of like a sample site.
Yeah, or they going to say they go to the farm and record it there. Yeah, no one's bringing them into the fucking studio.
No one's leading them by a rope, being like, okay, you go there and on the count of three, bleep.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's fascinating alone. And that's the thing is that part of it is such a small, like the animal presence in the studio thing, again, legend or not, like it's part of the bigger picture of what happened with this album, which is when you go and you listen to this album, you really do almost feel like you can't not hear so many different sounds.
Mm-hmm.
So when you listen to this album, you really are the closest you'll ever be inside Brian Wilson's mind and the things he heard.
When you know, when you told me that we were doing this album without stepping on your toes here.
Yes.
When I listened to most of the album, in some ways it's very chaotic. But when you're saying it's an insight into his mind.
Correct.
I almost imagine that that's what his brain sounds like to
exactly.
him. Because he's just poured out all of these juxtaposed
yes.
things.
Yes. That's exactly
into right. the studio.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, dude. I mean, you've nailed it. That's exactly what he's doing.
Yes.
And it's both beautiful and kind of upsetting to know that he's been carrying that around or was carrying that around.
Yeah.
And it took all the brothers leaving for him to be like,
yeah,
let me just dump this into the studio.
Yeah. And for them coming, that's brilliantly said and totally on point with it. And I think that I'm glad that you went back and listened to the album and you're able to hear that, because that really is the sad but also beautiful truth about it, is being inside his mind and what that chaos was like. And like you said, it took his brothers leaving, and it also took his brothers coming back to hearing and seeing what was happening and definitely kind of losing it and feeling not at this point like it's all fun and games, but coming off of a tour where they were playing their old classic hits that were nothing like what was being created here in the studio at this point, and had a lot of pushback and were very concerned at that point for his mental health. And that was pretty much exactly where everything changed for Brian Wilson. So it's been over 50 years since the Beach Boys released their milestone album, That Pet Sounds, right? And so that makes Wilson about, I think he's like 78 right now,
mm-hmm.
okay?
As of this year, 2021?
As of this year, 2021,
okay.
correct. So he's battled mental illness for over 50 years and has, as we mentioned, been diagnosed with schizophrenia disorder, manic behavior, bipolar disorder, severe depression. And he once himself described his condition for over the past 40 years that I've had auditory hallucinations in my head all day, every day, and I can't get them out.
Wow.
It's chilling.
That is chilling.
Yeah. So when I said that was the day that everything changed for Brian, it was the day that everything changed, because when his brothers came back, I think they realized that he really needed to be assessed, which is rough to me because the album was beautiful and the creation was there. So I think it was less of the worryment about too much of it just being so off the cuff and crazy, but it was actually Brian, I think at that moment, from what I understand, being very manic, and his brother sensing that and realizing that it's not this isn't normal behavior.
Yeah, I mean, we joked about getting animals in the studio.
Right.
It's all good fun. You know, we can we can talk about leading, you know, him looking like Noah, just leading pairs of animals through these studio doors. But the fact of the matter is, as you've said, it's not normal behavior.
Right.
And I think when you couple that with the statements that he's made, the soundscapes that he's trying to create, it does become something different.
Yes, exactly. And so we're going to step again a little bit into the deeper side of it. This is the reality and truth of his story. So Wilson said much older now, and later on in his life, that he had been living with this mental illness for so many decades that there were times when it was so unbearable, but that with doctors and medications, he was finally able to live what was more of a healthy and productive life. But he does describe that for a long period of time, every few minutes, including during the album Pet Sounds, that voices would say something derogatory to me. Quote, "Every few minutes," he'd say, "the voices say something derogatory to me, which would discourage me a little bit. But I have to be strong enough to say to them, hey, would you quit stalking me? Fuck off. Don't talk to me. Leave me alone." And I'd have to say these types of things all day long. It was like a constant fight. Music and this album was me fighting back.
Wow.
End quote. Isn't that fucking
unbelievable? Yeah, I mean, that's unbelievable.
I mean, that's just like, it's...
Well, it's a perfect insight into what living with that disorder is.
Right.
And again, like we said, is it genius? Is it mental illness? Is it both?
Right.
I think from that quote, we've definitely kind of got our answer that, as we will go on to say through a lot of these episodes, when Brian was doing his thing, there was not adequate insulation in the industry.
Correct.
There kind of still is in.
No.
But at least now people can get the help that they need
absolutely
a lot easier.
Yes. And that is a great transition, because although we could go down this rabbit hole more and talk even more deeply about it, you can also find this information on your own by searching him, reading his biography. There was a movie they put out called Love and Mercy, with Paul Dano playing Brian Wilson at a young age and John Cusack playing him as an older age. And it does a really good job going into further detail of recording Pet Sounds, but also his real struggle through life and having this mental illness that he was facing.
We'll link it.
Yeah, we'll definitely link it. And that's a better place for you to go and maybe get it. And I know that that's not documentary worth, but there are documentaries about it as well that you can also find, which we can also link. But that one's, I think, a little bit easier to digest. It's more of a Hollywood film, but they do a good job. And I know that Wilson stamped his heart and approval into that movie specifically.
Executive producer, no?
I think he might be, actually, yes. But yeah, so the segue with that, which I think is a really good point that you made, which is just there being now more options and more accessibility to understanding it and psychology still and doctors still with mental health and mental illness, even as I struggle with it myself. Take whatever antidepressants that I need to. And I have tried different ones, and you have to try different ones, and your body chemistries are different than everyone else's. So it is an ongoing battle, and it is something that we are continuously evolving toward, just as medicine is. They're trying to figure out what works best for what symptoms someone has. But the beautiful thing is, Brian was able to find a balance at some point. And before he went through hell and back by being overdrugged and basically manipulated. And again, that story can be depicted more in Love and Mercy, not that I'm going to go into, and written in his autobiography about the caretaker he had and that person just totally not prescribing him the right medication, taking advantage of him, and sending him down all the wrong paths.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1991, so years after of him being manipulated by the psychologist that he had at the time, Wilson's family finally sued.
Wow.
The psychologist.
We love suing stories.
Yeah, I guess we do.
I literally, every episode, I'm like, and then he sued him.
I mean, I think it's just, it's part of the nature of the
industry.
Being in a creative space, you know, it's part of the politics and bullshit. And a lot of bad individuals that want to come in and soul suck and take advantage of people that might not be able to take care of themselves, mm-hmm. but also might be doing it wrongfully, narcissistic, who knows? There's so many different reasons for it to happen. But you're right, the industry definitely just breeds all of this lawsuit chaos.
They love a suit.
Yeah, so but shortly after that, so much later in his life, you know, he finally was able to find some peace based on what he's written in his memoir and what you can find in his documentaries. And Wilson fell in love. Again, with who would be his second wife, and he says helped improve his life immensely. She stuck by his side through his ups and downs and helped really just manage his overall well-being, never wavering and always being there for him.
Aww.
He, in return, did the same for her. Wilson's, I know, man, it's so sweet. Wilson, it's like such a nice little love story to tell at the end, you know. But yeah, Wilson's friends even credit his ongoing, and family credit his ongoing well-being to that second wife, Melinda, who he ended up marrying in 1995. And I think they adopted like 5 children. Quote, she got him to see the right doctors. Longtime Wilson friend, Jeff Foskett said, she's provided a family environment for him. They actually do things together. Though Wilson admits he continues to struggle and still occasionally sees his therapist, on my good days, he says, I feel creative. I laugh a lot. I go to my piano and I play. But some days I don't feel creative and I don't talk to anybody. But that's okay. And it's beautiful.
What more can you ask for?
Yeah. So, you know, there's more to kind of close up in that storyline of his and his where he's at in that mission, but there's so much information out there for you to find. And that's, you know, I would love to go down that rabbit hole more and talk more into it, but we should get back to the music part, because one of the other epic things that came out of all of this chaos and turmoil is in Pet Sounds, in the album, there is a track called God Only Knows, which is, in my opinion, one of the most beautiful songs ever written. It is also acclaimed as being Paul McCartney and John Lennon's favorite song at that time when it came out, and saying that that was like one of their favorite songs that they loved and admired. So much so that I think Paul McCartney might have gone on record to saying that he had wished he had written it.
I bet he did.
Yeah, I bet
it's better than anything here, right? Oh,
burn, baby. Back to the Beatles swing. But so anyways, to that point, like it's you know, the songs on that album are, they're incredible. They're mixed with some strangeness.
Yeah.
And they take you on a journey in Brian's mind. But there is some really beautifully written songs. Even God Only Knows being one of them is also, the song is still very sad lyrically.
Well, it's kind of that juxtaposition that I started to talk about earlier.
Yeah.
Which is that some of the best songs commercially, you've got a sad song masquerading as a happy song.
True, yeah, it's like tucked underneath.
Literally,
happy.
Like the one that comes to mind, apart from, you know, God Only Knows, is Hey Ya by Outkast.
Oh, brilliant.
It's literally, even the music video, it's girls in horse riding gear.
Yeah.
They're doing that classic arms out, like Hey Ya. But then, you know, what Andre is rapping about is how he basically can't fix the broken home that he's in.
Right.
And
how many people actually know that?
Well, hopefully a few more now. But like people dance to Hey Ya. Exactly. But it's like if you, and actually there's a really amazing version of Hey Ya where they take out the instrumental and they just do it with a piano.
Nice.
And it just morphs into something different. And in that same way, with God Only Knows, you've essentially got a song that at its core is about Brian's struggles.
Yeah. With suicide.
But it's wrapped up in cotton wool. And you've got everyone going, oh, I love this song.
Yeah.
And it's used in movies to portray usually a happy ending, which is just probably so far from what poor Brian had ever envisioned at the start.
Correct.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It is.
How people can make someone feel a certain way and they don't even know the theory behind it.
Right. They might not even know unless you do exactly what we are trying to do with songs in this podcast and with musicians, is dig deep.
Well, dude, it's a very little known story because as we said at the start of the episode and as we've always said we're going to bring to you guys, You said Beach Boys. Yeah. I was ready to fucking put on a Hawaiian shirt and be like Aruba, Jamaica.
Of course.
And what we ended up with, actually, I think is a really, really good discussion about something that nobody knows about. Because, you know, Lil Nas X, Justin Bieber, that's current.
Yeah, but this is much older.
This is something that is, in many ways, more important.
Yeah.
Because the fact that it's endured through this time.
Yes.
And people still aren't aware.
Yeah.
If we can open the door for that a bit.
Absolutely.
We'll be happy boys.
Absolutely. And help remove a little bit more of that stigma. Me be vulnerable with our listeners and anyone willing to also be vulnerable back about this topic. And that's an okay thing. This is part of human nature.
Straight up.
And honestly, the creative genius and the beauty of what that album is, there is a lot of hardship underneath it all. And that is also in part of what makes it so beautiful. So I'm glad that I was able to share it with
you. Amazing. Here's what I will ask, though. I just had one question, and I didn't want to make light of any of the topics.
No, please.
But you know when you were talking about how Brian found love and he married someone that understood him?
Yes.
I did kind of think that you were going to say that it was a goat. Is that bad? I thought Pet Sounds was just like, I thought that was just a cover.
I'm pretty sure that's a thing. There definitely are goat lovers out there, but I'm also pretty sure it's forbidden in the Bible. I'm pretty sure they say, do not lay with thy neighbor's goat.
Well, grinding on Satan is also forbidden in the Bible, but we've watched that.
Yeah. No, that's really funny. I don't know, man. I think Melinda is a real person,
mm-hmm.
but who knows? I'm sure she talks to him in goat when he needs. Yeah, and that's you know, I think that's where this journey ends for me today. I appreciate you letting me take the reins and tell the story.
Oh man, Brian, that was fantastic. It's definitely a little different to my tabloid journalism, and I think it's always nice to switch it up.
Yeah, we dug deep. It's a story that's near and dear to my heart, and I think it's it was really special to be able to share that, and I hope it resonated for folks. And I 100% highly recommend you go pet a goat. Go to the zoo and also listen to Pet Sounds. It's incredible.
Preferably all three at the same time.
Yeah, if you can. Yeah. If you can make that work, definitely.
Triple threat.
So what do we got going next week?
All right, so a couple of things next week. I'm hoping Bono is going to turn up.
No.
The man's a ghost.
No, wait, I think he is supposed to come next week.
Well, he's meant to come this week. I mean, we've just given up.
Dude, whatever. At this point. He's going to keep saying it, and until he does, we're going to keep standing by it. Where is Bono?
Where is he? Yeah. What we can guarantee you next week, though, is a complete departure from this subject. If you thought that the 60s was maybe a little too far back for your tastes, we're bringing you up to the cutting edge of technology.
Ooh.
Literally 2020/2021.
Ooh.
We've got a global alien conspiracy wrapped up in a nice little bow by a post-punk band that really transcended the genre at the time.
Oh boy, am I excited for that one.
Oh, it's going to be a good one. So until next time, we'll see you.
Stay charmed. Thank you very much. Listen up, Charmers. Charm Life is a Spiritual Critters Limited production. All content constructed and performed by Charles Cameron and Brian Nunes. That's me. Post-production and editing by Charles Cameron. All music played in this podcast is licensed under contract.